Have you ever heard the song, "Jesus is a friend of mine"? Some of you have. Better yet, have you seen the music video? Yeah, some of you definitely have. When I was 20 years old, I started attending church for the first time, and I was introduced to this music video. And if you've never seen the music video before, let me paint a bit of a picture for you. Imagine a band full of Jesus-crazy people, dressed up in 70s disco gear, a little bit like Steven Hyde from That 70s Show, singing, "Jesus is a friend of mine. Jesus is a friend of mine. I have a friend in Jesus." Over and over and over and over and over again for 3 minutes. This became my introduction to the idea that Jesus could become our friend. And yeah, that's right. And being new to church, I saw these people dancing around in disco gear, singing, "Jesus is a friend of mine." And what I saw is that whatever they had, whatever Jesus had done to them, I wanted nothing to do with it. We're beginning a new series here at 10th on friendship. And for the next 5 weeks, we'll be looking at both our friendship with God and our friendship with others. And as we'll be discovering together, Jesus is inviting all of us to a friendship with him. And he invites us not just to any friendship, but to a friendship that is characterized by joy, both by receiving and responding to his love. If you have your Bibles, I invite you to turn to John 15, verses 9 through 14. Or if you like, you can also follow on the screen behind me. John 15. "As the Father has loved me, so I have loved you. Now remain in my love. If you keep my commands, you will remain in my love, just as I have kept my Father's commands and remain in his love. I have told you this so that my joy may be in you and that your joy may be complete. My command is this: love each other as I have loved you. Greater love has no one than this, than to lay down one's life for one's friends. You are my friends if you do what I command." Would you pray with me? Jesus, I thank you for these words, and that over the last few weeks you have spoken them to me, and you've spoken many more things to me, God. Jesus, I thank you that this is a word for all of us tonight, and that you are inviting us to learn more about what it means to have friendship with you, and that you are inviting us to a friendship that is characterized by joy. So we thank you for these words and the ways that you are going to speak to us tonight. In Jesus' name, amen. The passage I just read to you from John 15 is a part of the context of Jesus' last teaching block in John's gospel before he is taken to the cross and he's killed. And the disciples and Jesus are still sitting together at the Lord's Supper, the Last Supper. And Judas has just walked out on them all, and Jesus knows that Judas is going to go and betray him. And then Jesus says to his disciples that, "I am going somewhere that you cannot follow." And in a declaration of his love, his loyalty, and his passion for Jesus, Peter says, "Lord, where are you going? Wherever you are going, I would follow you. I would die for you." And in response, in front of the rest of the disciples, Jesus tells Peter that, in fact, over the next 24 hours, he would betray him 3 times. And I believe sorrow at this point begins to settle on the disciples as they realize that things aren't going to turn out as they'd expected. That Jesus, the Messiah, the conquering king who is supposed to ride into Jerusalem, conquer the Romans, kick them out, and then reestablish the kingdom, that this was probably not going to happen as they'd expected. That the disciples who were supposed to have positions of privilege and honor and authority in this new kingdom probably weren't going to get what they'd expected. And now Jesus begins to tell them that a central relationship in their life, that their relationship with Jesus was beginning to come to an end, and that he would be leaving them to a place they could not follow. Have you ever felt this kind of sorrow? The sorrow when you begin to realize that life isn't going to turn out as you'd expected. The sorrow when you begin to realize that you may lose a central relationship in your life. I felt this sorrow before. When I was 24 years old, returning from Europe for the first time, where I was studying abroad in Denmark, I returned home on a plane, and my father picked me up for the first time. And it was already a bit strange, I thought, that only he was there to pick me up. But I was so excited to go back home to our family home and to see my mom and the rest of my family that I went along with it anyways. And so we stayed in a hotel nearby. And the next morning I woke up, had a shower, came out and sat down. And when I sat down, he sat beside me and began to tell me that my mom and my dad had no longer been living together for the last few weeks. And that they were, in fact, going to be seeking a separation and likely going to be divorced. And I was crushed at the loss of a central relationship in my life, realizing that my life, my parents' lives, our lives were not going to turn out the way we all hoped and expected. And my parents are both here tonight, and there's a happy ending to their story. But the sorrow that I felt at the time was very real. And the sorrow that the disciples are feeling right now is also very real, as they begin to realize that things are not going to turn out as they'd expected, and that they are likely going to lose a central relationship in their life. But into this darkness, into this sorrow, Jesus speaks words of hope and light to his disciples. And he says that they are his friends. And we can easily glance over these words and take them for granted. But in fact, it's quite a radical thing that Jesus is saying to his disciples, that he is their friends. Now, friendship with God is a theme throughout the Old Testament, throughout the Hebrew Scriptures. And we can go back all the way to Genesis 3 to see the first instance when friendship with God is talked about. In Genesis 3, we read that God walked in the cool of the garden looking for Adam and Eve. And in the Old Testament, walking is a metaphor often used for friendship, that people like Enoch and Noah walked with God. It's a metaphor referring to friendship with him. And so what we are told in Genesis 3 is that God walked in friendship in the cool of the garden with man and woman before sin entered into the world. And then throughout the rest of the Old Testament, we read of only a few times when an instance of someone comes into friendship or we hear that they walked with God. People like Moses and Abraham and Enoch and Noah, these are all people who had friendship with God. But this was fairly rare. But what Jesus is telling us to us here in this passage is that a new relationship had been opened up to his disciples. And in fact, this new relationship has been opened up to us as well. And that's friendship with God. And Jesus goes even further in this passage to say that God has not only opened up to us friendship with him, but in fact, he says that we can cultivate a friendship with him that is characterized by joy, both by receiving and responding to his love. First, let's look at receiving. John's gospel doesn't have an account of the baptism of Jesus, but the disciples and the early Christian community would have been very familiar with Jesus' baptism, both by written stories that they might have read at the time, but especially through oral accounts that they would have been telling each other throughout the community. And one such account of Jesus' baptism comes in Mark 1. And we read this. Just as Jesus was coming up out of the water, he saw heaven being torn open and the Spirit descending on him in the form of a dove. And a voice came from heaven saying, "You are my Son, whom I love, with whom I am well pleased." that Jesus is telling us that to receive his love bears resemblance of Jesus receiving God the Father's love for him. That just as God the Father spoke these words over Jesus, "You are my son in whom I am well pleased." So Jesus speaks these words over us. "You are my son, you are my daughter in whom I am well pleased." But we often find it easy to imagine that Jesus was worthy of God the Father's love. But for some reason, we find it difficult to imagine that we are worthy of Jesus' love. But we all long to be loved. When I was growing up, I was picked on for the color of my hair. That's right. I have heard every single redhead joke there is. I've heard every comment, every slide remark, everything over 30 years. I've heard it. I even hear them still. I even still hear them today. And over the years growing up, I began to believe that I was unlovable. That because of these words that were being spoken to me, because of the actions that I'd experienced, that I was, because of the color of my hair, unlovable, unacceptable, that I was set apart from everyone else. And I begin to believe the words that they'd spoken to me and the actions that I begin to see in my life. And I begin to reject myself, reject my hair color, and reject the person that I'd been made. So one day in high school, I decided I was going to take matters into my own hands. So I went to the nearest grocery store, went to the hair dye aisle, and walked down until I found a color that I wanted, picked it out, went to the cashier, put it on the little conveyor belt, and waited in line. When I got to the front, the cashier picked up the box of women's hair color, looked at me, looked back at the hair color, looked at me, and thank goodness just rung it through. So I went home that night, mixed up the goo, put it on my hair, and that night I went from red to beach blonde. Yeah. In case there's any confusion, I'm the person on the right. The sweet woman in the middle is my grandma. We all long to be loved and to receive and to know love. And we're all even willing to do drastic things in order to find and experience love in our life. We all long to be loved. Henry Nouwen is one of my favorite writers, and he's a very prolific writer on the spiritual life. And in his book, The Life of the Beloved, he writes that the greatest enemy of the spiritual life is self-rejection. He says that we experience self-rejection when we hear and experience words and actions against us that lead us to believe that we are unlovable, that we're unacceptable, and that we're unworthy of people's love and acceptance. And so we in turn internalize those words and begin to reject ourselves. And he says that this is the greatest enemy in the spiritual life because it contradicts the sacred voice, Jesus' sacred voice, that calls us the beloved. That just as God the Father has called down onto Jesus, calling him his beloved, so Jesus calls down to us, calling us his beloved, saying, "You are my beloved son or my beloved daughter whom I love." And when we begin to experience self-rejection in the spiritual life, that voice of self-rejection contradicts that sacred voice of Jesus that calls us his beloved. But Jesus longs for us to receive his love and to hear the words that you are his son or daughter in whom he's very well pleased, in whom he loves. But how do we experience receiving God's love? How do we do that practically? We all live in a busy world. We all have busy lives. How do we receive Jesus' love? Well, for me, I've learned to cultivate two practices that I try to do every morning. And the first one is centering prayer. This is a practice that I learned from Pastor Ken. and I began to implement into my own morning routine. And when I often come to the office early, I'll sit down in a chair like this one, put my feet flat on the ground, palms up, and I'll say a word like Jesus, and I'll repeat it, Jesus, 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 or love, love, love. And after 5 or 10 minutes of hearing these words wash over me, I begin to remember that I am indeed God's beloved son, and begin to not just hear that voice, but feel and experience God's love for me. I begin to receive his love. Another practice that I do, especially on those mornings when I don't do centering prayer, is I listen to worship music. And right now, my favorite song is by the Canadian singer-songwriter Steve Bell. And the song is called Love is Our Way to God. And the chorus of the song goes like this. Love is our way to God, for God is love. Love is our way to God, for God is love. And then it goes on to say, and all who carry disappointment come, and those who fear the fire of judgment come, and those who teach this royal way is not for some. Shame on you. Now lovers come. Love is our way to God, for God is love. And I listened to this song over and over again, and after 2 or 3 times of listening to this song and hearing these words, I'm reminded that love is our way to God, but love is also God's way to us. And that hearing that, sitting there, hearing these words, listening to this song, I begin to hear Jesus' voice call out to me, you are my son, you are my beloved. And I begin to receive Jesus' love into my life. And I do these two practices in the morning because I found that when I sit there and I know what my true identity is, that I am God's son whom he loves and whom he's pleased, that it changes the scope of the rest of my day. And I live the rest of that day a little bit differently than I would have otherwise. But Jesus doesn't just say that we experience joy in our friendship with him by receiving love. But he also says that we experience joy and cultivate joy by receiving and responding. And Jesus says to us that when we both receive and respond, we can experience joy in our friendship with him. And I think most of us can relate to the idea that when we receive love, that we in turn hope to respond by loving others. When I was dating Sabine, who's now my wife, I was so full of her love that I sought any way that I could to respond by loving her. So one day I woke up really early in the morning, drove over to the community house where she lived, snuck to the side of her house, found her window, went through the garden, picked up a little rock, and I threw it out a window, and I missed. It was really early, that's right. So I went through, picked up a few more, threw them out our window until finally, ting, heard that beautiful sound of that little rock hitting the window without breaking it. That was really important. And I waited there, and I looked up, not knowing whether she had heard it or whether she would answer. But finally, the blinds were pulled aside, and she looked down with me, totally confused, but very beautiful, but totally confused, wondering why on earth I was there before 6 a.m. And I motioned for her, come down, come down, come to the front door. And I ran over to the front door, picked up my bouquet of flowers, and as she opened the door, still very confused, very tired and groggy, but equally beautiful, I gave her a bouquet of flowers and recited a poem that I'd written myself. And I'm not a poem writer, or I'm probably not a good poem writer. So it meant a lot to her that I'd actually written a poem to her. But as I was filled with her love, I longed to reach out and to respond by loving in return. But Jesus in this passage tells us something quite radical, quite different than what I'd just expected, what I'd experienced with Sabine. What Jesus says to us is that we're not just invited to pay all of our attention, all of our affection on him alone, although we are invited to do that as well. Instead, he says the proper way to respond, having received his love, is by loving others around us. That loving others is the proper response to the indwelling, being filled, receiving Jesus' love for us. Over the years, I've had the opportunity to get to know Joanna Skoukis, who is a friend of ours, of my wife and I, and also a member of the Third Service community. And as her friend, we've been able to journey with her and hear a little bit about her story, the ways that she's received God's love in her life, and the ways that she has in turn sought to respond. And Joanna's given me permission to share a little bit of her story with you. Choosing to work with University Christian Ministries, which is a university Christian club, often called UCM, was one of the biggest leaps of faith following my graduation from SFU. In my walk with the Lord, I've experienced an intentional friendship with God. He has pursued me relentlessly and constantly gives me the words to say as I'm discipling students. The more time I spend with God, the more his love becomes clear. In order to respond to his love for me, I began serving initially at SFU, and I'm now working at BCIT as the first female staff with UCM. God has blessed my path. Oh, how lucky I am now. There is a deep, rich peace that comes when one is walking in God's love. I have never felt a peace so tangible in life. One of the joys as I respond to God's love is working with international students. 8 years ago, God put on my heart reaching out to Muslim women in closed countries. And to this day, this prompting has not left me. And I look forward to the day when God will allow me to use my skill set in closed countries. For Joanna, having received Jesus' love for her, she's in turn sought to respond to the people around her by loving them. At first, it was as a student at SFU, mentoring, caring for, speaking words of encouragement over the other students. Now, as the first female staff member with UCM at BCIT, meeting busy women who live busy lives, who are stressed at work, mentoring them, working with them, loving them, caring for them, speaking God's words of love over them. And God's love has been so real and so radical in Joanna's life that she hopes one day to respond by loving women she has never met in countries she has never been to. That as we receive God's love, we in turn hope to respond by loving others around us. And that Jesus' love for us is so radical that it leads us to even love people around us we'd never met, we've never known, to countries we would otherwise never travel. And receiving and responding go hand in hand. That as we receive Jesus' love, we respond. And as we respond to his love, so too we also receive a greater abundance of that love. That the two, receiving and responding, go hand in hand and propel each other forward. And this is why Jesus can say that it's through receiving and responding together that his joy is made complete in us. Now, over the years, I've had the opportunity to meet with many people, many in small groups especially, where I get to hear their story. And if you want to get plugged into a small group, there's one coming up in just a few weeks. But I've had the honor to hear their story, both through small groups and in private pastoral meetings. And for some people, they first experience receiving God's love out of no intention, out of nothing on their own part. Just one day, they receive this deep feeling of God's love in their life. But for many people, in fact, as I found most people, they first receive Jesus' love by responding in some way. And this is true for me. When I was 20 years old, I began to ask big questions about life, as many 20 years old do. And I began to ask questions like, what is the meaning of life? Who am I? Does God exist? Who is God? And my very wise father recommended that I take some philosophy classes and begin to read some books, begin to pursue some of these questions. But as I took more classes and read more books, I found an insatiable hunger for these questions and had even more questions than I had before. And one of the questions that I was wrestling with was whether God actually existed. And so I asked a good friend of mine whether I could come to church with her and her family. And so one Sunday, I dressed up in my best clothes, black slacks, white shirt, striped tie, and came with them to church and was the only person under 60 years old wearing a tie. And that was fine. That was fine. And even though I didn't like the worship music at all, even though I didn't typically like the preaching, I kept coming back. And I kept coming back because I still had so many questions to ask, and I wanted to take in everything that I could. And so one evening, one of the women from the church, I was having a conversation with her, and she said, "Craig, what do you think about becoming a friend of God? And what do you think about saying the words, 'I believe in Jesus'?" And still having that voice of that music video, "Jesus is a friend of mine," in the back of my head, and the impression that it left on me, I told her, "No way. That's what crazy people believe." That I so did not want to become one of those people in the music video that I was curt and rude to even this sweet older lady, telling her, "No way. That's what crazy people believe." And she was very generous and she was very kind and let me change the subject. But that question stuck with me for weeks and months afterwards of whether I would be open to becoming a friend of Jesus. And I was still wrestling with whether I should stay at church or whether I should just give up the whole thing. See, I'd been reading so many books that I'd intellectually got to the place where I could reason both the existence for God and the argument for the existence against him, that I would intellectually be comfortable going either way. And so one day, as I was working for the city of Vancouver in my work truck, driving southbound on Oak Street, coming up on 62nd Avenue, I decided, you know what? I've got to do something to try and figure this out. I don't know if I can keep going to church unless I really believe that God does exist. And those remarks and that question came back to my mind from that older woman in church. Would you be open to a friendship with Jesus? And I thought to myself, you know what? I have nothing to lose, that I don't expect anything to happen, and I have nothing to lose. And if I just call out and say these words and nothing happens, that I can just move on with my life. So as quietly as I could, driving in the truck in rush hour, I said the words, "I believe in Jesus." And as I did, this light turned on in the inner core of my being, in my heart. And this smile came on my face. And so I did the only thing what any sane person would do if you experience the same light and the same joy. I said it again. I said it louder. "I believe in Jesus." And that light inside of me became brighter. And that smile became larger. And I said it again and again, louder each time, until finally I was yelling, "I believe in Jesus," in my work truck in rush hour, and the light had become so overwhelming inside of me that I had to pull my truck off the road, fearing that I would get into an accident. And I parked beside a City of Vancouver park. And I said, Craig, you're never going to believe this happened unless you sit and try to make sense of it right now. So I sat there for about 10 minutes, trying to make sense of what had happened. And by the end, I'd reasoned that I had called out to God. In some way, in somehow, he responded back. That God did, in some way, exist. And somehow, Jesus has something to do with him, though I don't really know how. Though I didn't know it at the time, with my words, I believe in Jesus, I would be responding to an invitation that Jesus had already offered to me, that Jesus offers to us all. And Jesus talks a little bit about this invitation in the passage just following the one that we read together. In John 15, verse 16, he says this, "You did not choose me, but I chose you and appointed you that you might go and bear fruit." You did not choose me, but I chose you. That Jesus says that he has already chosen us all, that we are invited into life with him and to receive his joy, to receive his love, to receive him, to enter into friendship with him and experience a joy in that friendship that we'd never experienced before. And even though I had skepticism and questions and expected nothing to happen, that when I called out to Jesus, saying to him, "Jesus, I believe in you," he responded and offered to me the gift of his love, which I experienced through that light and the joy and that smile. And so Jesus too offers this invitation to us all, that he has chosen all of us. And he says to us, "I have chosen you." And so in a minute, I'm going to pray a prayer. And if in your heart you feel a desire to respond to Jesus' words that I have chosen you, you are my son or daughter who I love, in you I'm well pleased. If in your heart you have a desire to respond to this invitation, I invite you to pray with me right now. Would you pray with me? Jesus, I still have so many questions. I still have doubts. I still want to know you more. But Jesus, I want to receive your love. I want to hear the voice, to feel that I am your beloved child with whom you are very pleased. I long to receive your love and your friendship. So Jesus, I respond to you by saying these words. I believe in Jesus. I believe in Jesus. And in response, hear these words from Jesus back to you. You are my beloved child. In you, I am very pleased. You are my beloved child. In you, I am very pleased.